Thanks for downloading the John Contreras Show on demand. And remember, you can always listen to my show as well as on-demand audio from Ben and Woods, Gwen and Chris, and other Intercom San Diego stations using the Radio.com app. Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode.
This ball game belongs to my San Diego Padres.
This is 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable, infield edition, presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Will Manny Machado bounce back after a down year? Can Fernando Tatis Jr. be even better in year two? Who will be the starting catcher joining Ben and Woods and Gwen and Chris? Here's your host, John Cantara.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to 97.3 The Fan. And then you are listening to 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Between now and 1 o'clock, we're going to break it down from the catcher to the first baseman, the situation at second base, of course, shortstop with Fernando Tatis Jr., and, of course, the great Manny Machado at third base for San Diego Padres. We've got the entire crew here today, Ben and Woods, and Gwen and Chris, and we're going to try to come up with all the answers, solutions. Hopefully our San Diego Padres can have an opportunity to be one of the five teams in the National League to qualify for the postseason playoffs. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us. We're excited about this. And then once I adjourn at 1 o'clock, I'll take my regular show from 1 until 3 leading up to the Gwen and Chris program. They'll have you for 4 hours. And then there'll be a Jesse Agler with the Padres Social Hour. But we're going to get rolling, and we're going to start off right at first base. We're going to start off with the veteran Eric Hosmer, who in his first 2 years here with the San Diego Padres, he's averaged .259 with a .316 on base percentage. He's a walloped 40 homers and driven in 168 runs. But last year, career low defensively. He committed 14 errors down there at first base, and that was a real bugaboo, and that was one of the reasons they brought in Bobby Dickerson to work with the infielders to get Eric Hosmer back on the beam defensively. And of course, he really struggled down the stretch last year, hitting only .170 in the month of September. And Ben Higgins, this was a really big sign two off seasons ago for the Padres, and to this point Eric Hosmer's been okay, but he hasn't been what the Padres I think expected.
Well, Coach, I haven't been shy, and good afternoon to you, Coach. I haven't been shy about expressing my disappointment in Eric Hosmer. They're just not getting enough out of him at the first base position. It might be different if he was playing a tougher position defensively and putting up the numbers that he does. He's certainly not a bad ball player, but they have to get more out of the first base position offensively, especially if he's not going to be playing gold glove defense over there like he wasn't last year. I mean, he was average at best. As you said, he took a step back. So I need a lot more out of Eric Hosmer. It doesn't have anything to do with the money. Yeah, he's making a lot of money, but any baseball team in the major leagues will tell you first base has to be one of your primary offensive positions. And so far, Eric Hosmer has left me a little bit wanting in his first two seasons with the Padres.
Hey, Woodsy, let me ask you this. There's been a lot of talk during this offseason. Maybe the Padres should, give Eric Hosmer a day off against, some tough left-handers. He's not hit left-handers well. In fact, last year he hit .231, but only one homer and 16 RBIs.
Yeah, Coach, it's such a good idea because they do have so much versatility now. And, when did Will Myers really look the best in a San Diego Padres uniform? I think it was that year he was playing first base, and I think everybody kind of scratched their heads when they went out and got Hosmer. I'm not going to come on the air today and say, oh, yeah, it was such a dumb move. I loved it at the time. I loved that Royals team. For me, was like watching them roll through the playoffs and play the way they did. I loved it, and I loved Hosmer, and I still love Hosmer. I just want a lot more out of him. But, Coach, you're right. He can't hit lefties. He just can't do it. It's been kind of proven over his career. He's just not the guy, and you just wonder, man, rookie manager, never managed in the big leagues before. Is he going to be able to go to Eric Hosmer and say, hey, Mad Bum's on the mound, it's the first game, Will Myers is going to be starting at first, Coach? I don't think so.
I've been talking about platooning for a while now, guys, and it actually made more sense last year. You can bring Will Myers into first base against lefties, but that leaves a hole on the right-handed bat in the outfield now. Now that Hunter Renfro's gone and you don't have quite as much right-handed power in the outfield, it's rob from Peter to pay Paul.
You got it.
In this situation. the one thing that I've been trying to convince Woods of, and I think he understands, like the one thing I learned in my college economics class, sunk costs.
Sunk costs.
You're paying Eric Hosmer anyway. No matter what. If he's not producing, It doesn't do any good to just keep throwing him out there against lefties. You need to find a better solution. Until they find one, yeah, I mean, you let him try to work his way through the problems, but you can't just put your head in the sand and hope that he gets better. You need to come up with a better solution, especially against left-handed pitching at first base.
Tony Gwynn Jr., Eric Hosmer has been a four-time Gold Glove winner, a career-high 14 errors a season ago. What did you see out of him at first base?
Took a step back. I think he had a bad year defensively. It wouldn't be the first Gold Glover to have a bad year defensively. Everybody's jumping out the window now on Eric Hosmer, it seems. And rightfully so. He's got to pick up the pace offensively. But to be quite frank, last year, who were you going to platoon him with? Who was swinging the bat that much better against left-handed pitching? So I think. This year, especially because in a 60-game season, Coach, everybody's in it. And because of that, yeah, this is the year where those same offensive numbers and defensive struggles could cost you some at-bats and some playing time. But I'm a believer in Eric Hosmer in terms of him being able to turn it around defensively to get back to that Gold Glove caliber first baseman. But in a year like this, I'm not opposed to seeing him platoon, but I believe ultimately that signing also led to Manny Machado then coming here. There's a lot of other dominoes that fell, I think, kind of woke people up around, at least players around the league, that hey, the Padres are no longer a team that is looking to only get guys who are willing to take discounts. They're willing to pay, and I think that opened up the door for a guy like Manny Machado. So in that terms, I think it's been a great signing, but he certainly is going to have to be the player that I think the Padres were looking to sign when he was with Kansas City. He's got to have that kind of year this year.
Chris Ello, I look at Eric Hosmer a year ago, and we don't want to pile on. We know he's a good guy, and he works hard, and he shows up and plays in just about each and every game. But, you know, you're going to be playing 40 games against the National League West, and I went back last night and looked at all of his averages against the teams in the National League West. Last year, 68 at-bats, a 190 average against the Arizona Diamondbacks. 75 at-bats against the Colorado Rockies. He hit .187. Against the San Francisco Giants, 65 at-bats. He hit .215. And the one team he did a pretty good job against in 71 at-bats was the Los Angeles Dodgers, where he hit .282. But, boy, you need better production out of Eric Hosmer against the National League West this year if you hope to be a playoff team.
All right, that's it. That's enough. Eric Hosmer for All-Star First Base. You guys are just destroying this guy, and I can totally understand it. I mean, he was frustrating last year statistically, but Eric Hosmer is the perfect kind of guy that can lead the Padres to where they want to go this year. I think in a short 60-game sprint, I think he lays it all out on the table. I think Eric Hosmer, part of it was sharing the leadership role with Machado the year before. He was pretty much the only leader, the only veteran that this team had. I think that was something not necessarily unfamiliar with him to him, but just something that added a little pressure to him. I think this year everybody leaves Eric Hosmer alone, and Eric Hosmer shows up a little bit closer to the Kansas City Royals Eric Hosmer that we've seen, who was an all-star player and certainly is capable of getting back to that level. Now, hitting against left-handed pitching, last year it was really a big-time split, but you look over his career, he's got 34 home runs against left-handed pitching. He's hit .250 as opposed to .290 against right-handed pitching, so he can get the job done against lefties. I think the other thing with Eric Hosmer is I think you need to find another spot for him in the lineup. I think the cleanup spot right there in the middle of that lineup is, I don't think he produces enough to bat cleanup. And I think that the Padres, it's incumbent on this team, it's incumbent on somebody to take over that spot and drop Eric Hosmer into a 5 or 6 role where he can just sit back and drive in some runs that are left over out there. So, look, he's not going to commit 14 more errors at first base. You don't go from 4 errors to 14 and then stay at 14. The chances are you come back closer to 4 or 5 like he had the year before. So I'm not worried about him defensively. Nobody works harder than Eric Hosmer. Look, I mean, I could come up with all the same negative statistics that you guys can on Eric Hosmer, but Coach said I couldn't pile on. I refuse to do so if Coach says so.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, come up with negative statistics. I mean, the stats don't lie. thing about Eric Hosmer, the one thing that I love about him is this guy shows up and wants to play every day. I mean, he played 160 games a year ago. His first year here, 157 games. That last year in Kansas City, he played in 162 games. Now, Tony, I want to go back to you real quick to kind of put the bow on Eric Hosmer. And I don't want this to sound like an indictment on Andy Green, because I like Andy, and I think Andy, if he gets another opportunity to manage, I think he's going to do some things maybe a little bit different than he did here in San Diego. But do you think with Jace Tingler coming in, it's going to be a little bit more of a relaxed atmosphere on a daily basis? Not that guys are going to kind of do just whatever they want to do, but just a little bit more of a more relaxed atmosphere and not being so uptight down around the clubhouse and in the dugout during ball games?
I do. I think it'll be, I don't know if it relaxes the word, but it'll be a different environment than it was. It won't be as tight. That being said, there is a sense of urgency that I think those of us who got a chance to go down to spring training, we felt it. You could almost feel it, that there was a sense of urgency about this year's camp that you couldn't say in the past 2 years. Now, granted, in the past 2 years, you had signings like in the middle of camp, which kind of disrupt things and kind of change the flow of things. But this year, this team came in intact. At least the core did, and I think that means something. I think with Jace Tingler taking over the helm, I think these guys have a somewhat of a fresh start and realize the way they finished last year, I think by all accounts, was unacceptable. And I think guys understand that, and they've come into camp, went back in camp 1.0. They came in with that urgency, and I think you're hearing that's the same thing they picked up here in spring training 2.0.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to our 97.3 The Fans Padres Roundtable presented by our friends at Bud Light Seltzer. We'll be on until 1 o'clock, and then I'll get into my regular show up into 3 o'clock. It'll be Gwen and Chris, and they'll replay the roundtable tonight at 6 o'clock, and then tomorrow morning, Ben Higgins, Steve Wood's going to get to be able to sleep in a little bit because we're going to replay it in the 5 to 6 hour tomorrow. So make sure if you miss any part of this, because you got to go into a meeting, your boss is a mean guy, you'll be able to catch it again tonight at 6, from 6 to 7, leading into the Padres Social Hour, and again tomorrow morning, 5 to 6, during the Ben and Woods program. All righty, Steve Woods, Jurickson and Profar, once upon a time the number one prospect in all of Major League Baseball. He's hit 20 homers each of the last couple of years. Last year his average was down, but getting reunited with A.J. Preller, I think this was a brilliant move during the offseason, because this kid, he's had his struggles defensively throwing the baseball, but there's so much talent with this guy, and maybe he can really realize it here in San Diego, being around a guy like A.J. Preller.
Yeah, there's a lot of upside, and Coach, you know, my background, I came from Dallas, Texas, and I heard nothing but Jurickson Profar for a long time, and I remember some trades on the table that could have landed Jurickson Profar. It would have landed the Rangers quite a bounty, and they said no, so they believed in him as a top prospect, and he hasn't, you know, like a lot of top prospects do, he hasn't really reached his full potential. He's had some good years at the big league level, and you know, it's an A.J. Preller move, Coach. It's high upside. I'm really excited to see him. I know he had some issues throwing the baseball. We saw a little bit of that down in spring training. We knew to look for it. We were told about it. We watched for it, and yeah, we saw it. But you know, look, that's what all those coaches are for. He's a big league ball player. He's going to be fine. I do feel it's the most up in the air spot in the infield, you know, other than the catching position, Coach. I just think that I think it's his job to lose. Now, we've seen that here before. I want to see him go out and take that gig. You know, Greg Garcia is a great, great backup to have, can play anywhere in the infield, but I want Jurickson to go snatch second base and make it his, Coach.
Hey, Ben, it almost seemed like we're holding a tryout camp. Profar's got the job right now, but the Padres last week make a deal with the Oakland A's. They bring in Jorge Mateo, a guy that can run a little bit. He's played short. He's played second. Hit 19 homers in AAA. He's yet to play in the big leagues. We got Greg Garcia, who last year played or had a career-high 311 at-bats for the Padres. We got Ty France. We got Jake Cronenworth. I mean, it's a logjam. So if Profar were to stumble, there are a lot of guys waiting in line to get an opportunity.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, Coach, if at the end of 60 games, we find out that Greg Garcia is the guy who ends up playing second base more than anyone else, just because we saw him last season. You know what you're getting. Pretty consistent, pretty good bat, good attitude out on the field. Not that the other guys don't have a good attitude, but when it comes to Jurickson Profar, there's just part of me that just senses that A.J. Preller just wants this guy to be good.
He wanted him bad.
From his days back in Texas when he was coming up and he had all the tools, and maybe they're in there. Maybe the Padres coaching staff can unlock something that the Rangers were never able to, that the A's weren't really able to. And yeah, they will have an amazing find on their hands. But I think this is A.J. Preller scouting with his heart, maybe a little bit more than just what he's seeing on the field. Because what you've seen on the field from Jurickson Profar on the major league level since he's gotten there has been mediocre. He hasn't really been a guy who's impressed. He's been, you know, just a guy that you can replace in there at second base by a Greg Garcia, who no one really considers more than an above-average utility guy. And that might be Jurickson Profar's ceiling as well. We'll see after this year, but I just some part of me just thinks that A.J. Preller just wants this, maybe a little too badly, for Jurickson Profar to finally make it big on the big league level.
Well, for fans that haven't followed Profar, in 2018 with Texas, of 146 games, he had 254 with 20 bombs, 77 RBIs. And last year, in his only season with the Oakland Athletics, played in 139 games, 459 at-bats, and had 20 homers, 67 RBIs. But the batting average dwindled down to 218. Chris Ello, take a look at that second base spot. Your thoughts on Profar and Greg Garcia, Cronenworth, Ty France, and we haven't seen Jorge Mateo other than reading the stats from AAA a year ago.
Yeah, well, I'm a homer. I'm rooting for Ty France. I'm rooting for Greg Garcia, a couple of guys that have San Diego ties. I think every time these guys get an opportunity, they seem to produce and help the ball club win. But I'm going to tell you what it's going to come down to at second base, and I think everybody's talking about Profar's hitting statistics and everything that he does with the bat. He's going to have to make the plays defensively. He's just absolutely going to have to be there defensively. We can't afford 13 throwing errors. He made 24 errors the previous year with Oakland or with Texas, splitting time between second and shortstop. So if he makes the plays defensively, then this infield should be sound and they should be all right, and he should be able to hit enough to stay in the lineup. Now, the other thing is Ty France is a third baseman. I'm working like the Dickens to play second base, and I think he can play second base, but he doesn't have quite the depth of knowledge at that position that he does at third, and I think he's given it everything he possibly can. Jake Cronenworth, another interesting guy in this mix, but he also pitches. I mean, we talked to him, Tony and I, at the spring training, and just absolutely amazed at his ability to do so many different things. But I think the Padres need a second baseman that can be steady and make the plays. They've got enough power and production potentially at first base, shortstop, and third base. Second base, offensive numbers will be a bonus, but the key thing is somebody who turns a double play when it's there to be turned, makes all the plays, picks up all the ground balls, no bad throws. If Profar does that, then he's your second baseman. If not, somebody else can have to step up.
Hey, Tony, your thoughts on Profar. You saw him in spring training. I'll tell you what, you know, this guy was highly touted. And I used to get tired. I kept hearing about him, and he wasn't really getting it done in Texas. But then his last year, he hit the 20 homers. Average was down. But, you know, this kid's only 27 years of age. And I think getting back with a guy in A.J. Preller, not that A.J. is going to be with him morning, noon, or night, but there's going to be a comfort level there. And I really think there's a lot of talent that yet is to be unleashed out of this guy at the big league level.
No doubt about it. First, Chris was preaching right there, man. I think in a 60-game set, I think we tend to get so focused in on the offensive numbers. In a 60-game season, if you're not pitching the ball and you're not catching the ball, you will lose. You will give away more games than you will win. And I think that second base spot, infield-wise, second and short, really, because Fernando struggled defensively over there, too, for all those special plays he made. This team is going to have to catch the ball. So defense should be at a premium. That being said, I'm with you guys on Jurickson Profar. I played against him a lot coming up, and he just never really seemed to quite get over the hump and be the prospect that everybody was talking about. That being said, it's amazing for players when you know that somebody believes in you. And Ben mentioned AJ really wanting this to work out. He knows that too, and he's going to try to put his best foot forward. I think ultimately this position boils down to the odd hand. Who's catching it? Who's coming up with some timely hits? Mind you, on the Zoom call we had with Jace Tingler 2 days ago, he left the door open because there was a question asked about that position and what they were going to do. They got a spot or two open still. There seemed to be a door open. I'm forgetting who the Padres signed. They didn't bring back the second baseman they had recently.
Brian Dozier.
He kind of left the door open for Brian Dozier if that spot is still needed to be filled. But I think at the time, they're going to, for this time being, they like what they have. They want to see what they have. And as we get closer, maybe they use that spot for a guy like Brian Dozier.
Hey, Ben, you had a follow-up?
Well, what Tony said just kind of struck with me about the guy who's got the hot hand is going to be out there in a 60-game season. When it comes to power, you mentioned Profar, 20 home runs the last couple of seasons, but we all know home runs tend to come in bunches for guys. They get hot, you know, for a couple of weeks. They may have five or six, and then, you know, for the next month they only hit one, and then they get hot again. In a short season, that's going to be accentuated. 20 home runs over 60 games is only about 8 home runs. So is he going to have a really hot streak where he hits, you know, 8 to 10 in a month and all of a sudden those numbers look great? Or is he only just going to hit one or two? You have to ride the hot hand, I think, more than you even would over 162 games, because you got to take advantage. When a guy is ripping it, he's going to have to be in the lineup more. So we can't just plug a guy in and say, hey, you're our guy. If you're not hot, you got to take him out and give someone else an opportunity to do so in a short season.
Tony, you got a little follow-up on that as well.
Yeah, no, Ben's exactly right, and that's why the defensive portion it will be so important, because defense doesn't generally slump, right? So if guys are about to make the plays, they're keeping the Padres in games, that's going to be a premium, because as Ben said, homers do come in bunches, and in a 60-game season, it's going to look a lot different than maybe 162, where a guy can get on a 2-3-week stretch where he's just going bomb after bomb after bomb. That's going to look different in a 60-game set. So pitching and defense will be at its premium, and that allows Jace to go with a hot hand most of the time.
You know, gentlemen, I think we all agree that Greg Garcia is on this ball club. I think Ty France is probably on this ball club with going with 30 ball players. We'll see. After the 2 weeks, they cut it down to 28. In the end of the month, they'll cut it down to 26. But I want to talk a little bit about Jake Cronenworth, and I want to get Woodsy's thoughts. You take a look, Steve. Last season at Durham, 94 games, he had 334, 10 homers, 45 RBIs, and we've heard about him being a pitcher. Well, he hadn't pitched a lot. I mean, he hadn't actually had pitched since 2015, his junior year at Michigan, until last year. He pitched in 7 games, 6 starts. He was kind of that opener. Pitched 7 1/3, gave up 4 hits, 2 runs, none of them earned, had 8 walks and 9 strikeouts. I wonder if the Padres are even really toying with that idea to use him on the mound, even though that's one of the big selling points when he came over here during the winter.
And we heard a lot about him, Coach, at spring training, as you just kept hearing his name. You know, we were there a week or so, and I just felt like we heard his name every day. We saw him play a little bit, and he's got a good glove, from what I understand, too, and can swing it. But the power arm, it's just throw that to the list of all the other power arms in that bullpen. I don't know how they use stuff like this, Coach. I really don't. It's so rare. In the big leagues these days, where I know it's more common than it has been before, but it just feels like you know, he's obviously not going to be a Shohei Ohtani or anything like that, but I mean, it's just more tools in the belt for Jace Tingler, more tools for AJ Preller. Obviously, you don't want to see him playing shortstop or second base probably very much right now, I would imagine, at this young part of his career, but I mean, if he's valuable, he's valuable. If he can sling it, then he can sling it. But I just don't know what you do. They have so many arms down there that can bring it. I don't know what the best spot for Jake Cronenworth is, Coach.
Chris Ello, Jorge Mateo, when he came over, he's out of options, so the Padres have to keep him. You think that could force Cronenworth off the roster for opening day?
It could. I mean, it's a numbers game, and obviously the extra spots on the roster are going to work in Cronenworth's favor. But I don't see Cronenworth doing a whole lot of pitching. I mean, even though he can pitch, I mean, we talked about it last week. We couldn't even get through the starting rotation in an hour because we had so many possible guys that can pitch. And I think the Padres have plenty of guys that can throw. Jake Cronenworth would be another one, but I don't know that that's where they need him. I think what they would need is for him to come in and play just a brilliant second base. And again, I'm going to go back to defensively with him, and I'm going to go defensively with Mateo. I'm going to go defensively with Profar and Garcia. Yeah, you give me the guy that's making the plays at second base. That's the guy I'm going to want in the lineup over there. And, you know, Cronenworth's had some pretty decent numbers in the minor leagues, and he's obviously capable. So we'll see who ends up playing second base. But I think you could end up having four or five different guys the first couple of weeks, and then you try to settle in on somebody.
Hey, Ben, give me your thoughts on Cronenworth, what you saw during the spring.
You know, I actually kind of disagree respectfully with Chris, who said the extra roster spots is going to work in his favor. I think at the beginning of the season, when they have 30 roster spots, it's actually going to work against Jake Cronenworth, because they're almost certainly going to take probably 14 pitchers. It's going to be plenty of arms for the Padres. They got a deep bullpen. They don't need a fringe two-way player early in the season. I actually think that might keep Jake Cronenworth off the roster on opening day. Now, when they reduce that to 28 and then 26, and you all of a sudden you have to keep a couple of those pitchers out of the bullpen, well, then a two-way player might look a little more appealing, where, you know, if you get caught in a bind a certain day and you don't want to waste, you know, one of your better bullpen arms, you get a guy who can come in and eat an inning or two that, you know, plays second base the other time. But I actually think Jake Cronenworth will have a tougher time making the opening day roster, because the Padres are going to have plenty of pitching to start. That's not going to be an issue, at least for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Tony, I want to get your thoughts on Cronenworth. At least of all what I saw in the spring, defensively, this guy's pretty solid.
Yeah, no, he can. Just watching the way how the fluidity in which he moves over, I saw him play short and I saw him play second in spring, and it's clear that he's an infielder. Like, he has those same type movements, good glove, and in the game that I saw, which was the first game I actually got to see him swing the bat, he looked great. He looked good at the plate. How he fits into this team, I don't think anybody knows at this point, right? I think obviously with the craziness of how this season is set up, anything is really possible, but you have to wonder, where does he fit in, right? Manny's going to play almost every day. Tatis, as long as he's healthy, he's going to play every day. Really, the only open spot is second base, and I think that's up in the air. He has a shot to make the club if he goes out and impresses enough at second base, but it just seems like it's going to be an uphill battle in terms of him being on the roster to start. Now, over the course of the 60-game season, there's a great chance that we'll see him on this roster and get an opportunity to play, but it just seems like, even though he's a two-way player, which you got to have to kind of hold with a grain of salt, the Rays had him, so, you know, they're always thinking outside the box. We don't necessarily know if that's really what his calling was. After having a conversation with him, you know, as you mentioned, he pitched junior year, and then he pitched last year for the first time in a while. So I'm reluctant to call him a two-way player at this point. He seems like an infielder to me.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. If you're just tuning in, Coach John Quintero, along with Gwynn and Chris, Ben and Woods, we're going to be going to the top of the hour with our Padres Roundtable, and again, presented by our friends at Bud Light Seltzer, and then we'll open the phone lines up at 1 o'clock, and I'll do my regular show leading into Gwynn and Chris coming up at 3 o'clock. They'll be with you for a full 4 hours. Okay, gentlemen, let's slot over to shortstop, and I want to read these numbers, let them digest a little bit, and get your thoughts on our man, Fernando Tatis Jr. He appeared in 84 games last year. He hit .317 in 334 at-bats. He struck out 110 times, a little bit high in that number. He had 13 doubles, 6 triples, 22 homers, 53 RBIs, an on-base percentage of .379. He stole 16 out of 22 on the base path, 73%. He had a 4.2 war and an OPS of .969. And Steve Woods, I'll start with you. Anytime I think it's Fernando Tatis, I just kind of giggle, because this guy's really an amazing young player at only 21.
Larry's an amazing kid, and he is somebody that will get you to the ballpark, and he's somebody that you will watch a game in August down, you know, out 15 games in the standings. You tune in to see this kid. He is a game changer. He's a franchise changer. And it's the left side of our infield is my favorite left side of any infield in baseball, period, the end. That's how I feel about those two guys over there. But as far as Tatis goes, Coach, I want to see him see games playing the way that we know he can play. We talked a little bit about it this morning on our show. You know, look, he booted some balls. He threw some easy, you know, two hoppers right to him, throws it away. It happens. It happens to the absolute best of them in this game. It's so humbling. We're talking a very small percentage of his game that he needs to clean up to be elite, an elite, elite shortstop, an elite player, lead off, two-hole, three-hole, wherever he's going to end up in his career, Coach. He is one of my favorite baseball players I have ever seen in 44, coming up on 45 years of watching the game of baseball. He's electric in every way.
Ben Higgins, I think, and Steve brought it up, he had some throwing errors, you know, on some routine plays, and I know he had a little bit of a shoulder and finger issue at times last year, but he also was guilty at times because he's so talented. There's not a ball hit in his vicinity, in his area code, that he doesn't think he can make a play on, and sometimes you got to just put that ball in your pocket, toss it back to the pitcher, and play for the next batter.
Yeah. Young rookie at young. That. If you're not allowed to make those mistakes when you're a 20-year-old in Major League Baseball, I mean, what are we expecting? This guy has exceeded all expectations so far. I'm certainly expecting another great season. It just comes down to health. If he's on the field, he's going to be fantastic. I know there's some of the sabermetricians who say there's no way he can keep up his BABIP, you know, his batting average on balls in play was, over 400 last year, that's unsustainable, that'll come back. But I'm not so sure that, you know, when he puts a ball in play, the other team basically panics.
Yep.
I mean, once that ball is in play and it's not popped up, they know that they're going to have to make a perfect play defensively and rush it probably to get him at first base. That's going to lead to a lot of on-base opportunities, whether he's hitting the ball well or not. You know, the outfielders always have to be on their toes when he's on base. It helps other guys, at bat. When he's out there and distracting pitchers and catchers and outfielders and infielders, he's just such a revelation and a dynamic player for the Padres. So I am really looking forward to season two of Fernando Tatis Jr.
Hey, Chris Ello, you were out there a lot last year. You know, you were doing the pre- and post-game, but you were out there early afternoon quite a bit during the week, and you're watching him. You and Tony are sitting up there in the press box, and you watched this guy do a lot of extra work last year to have that year that he had. Unfortunately, he was only able to stay healthy for 84 games.
Yeah, and he did all that work with a smile on his face, and that's one thing that's kind of missing right now because the pandemic has him wearing that mask, which is a good thing for all you young people out there, all you young and old people out there. Fernando Tatis Jr. can wear a mask while he's doing his job. You can wear one doing your job, but I do miss the smile a little bit. Look, you brought up one stat there, Coach, that I thought was very interesting. 16 stolen bases out of 22 tries, 73%. 73%, and he's still trying to figure out how to steal a base, and he's already at 73%. I look for that number to go up this year around 80%, and I don't know how many stolen bases that gives you in a 60-game season, but I think he can get around 15 again this year, and I think he can hit another 15 home runs this year, and I think he can do both those things. My big question with Fernando Tatis Jr. is, do you leave him in the leadoff spot where he was successful last year, or do you drop him down in the order, especially against left-handed pitching, to try and pick up a little more production? I mean, 22 home runs, only 53 RBIs. That's not his fault. That's a matter of the fact that guys weren't on base when he was hitting all those home runs. But if you had him in the middle of the order, those 22 home runs might have produced 70, 75 RBIs. So I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on this year. I don't necessarily project, and I'm not great at doing this, but I don't project Fernando Tatis Jr. as a career leadoff hitter. I project him as a middle-of-the-order guy, and we'll see if any of that happens this year.
Well, that was going to be my question to Tony, and I totally agree with you 100%. Tony, I would say right now, just looking at the makeup of this Padre ball club, it probably works best for him to be the leadoff guy, but three years from now, I think that's going to be a different story.
Yeah, no question. I think we get outside of this year, maybe next year. Fernando Tatis, as he starts to develop and grow into his body, he won't be a leadoff guy no more. He'll be hitting right smack dab in that middle of the lineup. Offensively, man, I have zero worries about Fernando. I really do. I mean, his ability at such a young age to recognize pitches, lay off tough pitches, make the adjustment from pitch to pitch is just something you don't see often for a guy his age. Defensively is where I have my concerns, and it's not that I have my concerns like he can't do it. Because as you mentioned, Coach, he's so athletic. He reminds me a lot of Ray Ordonez from the standpoint he gets to balls that a lot of guys just aren't going to get to. Therefore, he ends up putting himself in a position to have a lot more errors. But at the end of the day, 18 errors in 83 games is a boatload. And he's going to have to clean it up. And for him, believe it or not, it's about slowing things down for him. He is, as you mentioned, so athletic, gets to so many different things, and he's always kind of got that pace, that fast pace. You watch every good shortstop, it almost moves like they move like they're in slow motion. Every throw, no matter who's running, it beats you by a step. As Fernando Tatis gets older and starts to realize, starts to be smarter about some of the plays defensively, this dude's got a chance to really be one of the best players in the league. My only other concern is his health, man. He's 21 years of age. He has that invincibility cloak over himself. I watched Bryce Harper do the same thing, and my worry is that he doesn't know how to throttle down sometimes in order to preserve his body. Because, listen, especially when you're this young and he's still feeling into his body, the body absorbs a lot each and every day. I go back to those stress fractures he had in his back at the end of the year. That is due to how hard he plays. So you want a guy like that who's that valuable to be in the lineup as much as possible. Those are my only two concerns. Him needing to slow down, which I think comes with more experience, and him being healthy and staying on the field.
Yeah, there's certain balls that you've got to just backhand and toss them back to the pitcher rather than trying to make that throw and trying to do a little bit too much. That's what I saw most of last year from him. But again, boy, what a talented guy, and we're so lucky to have him in a Padre uniform. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to our 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable presented by Bud Light Seltzer. We're breaking down the infield, and let me ask you this, gentlemen. Benny, I'll start with you and Steve and Chris, and Tony will go in that order. Give me your thoughts on the backup shortstop. Should it be Manny Machado, or could it be a Jorge Mateo? What are you looking at if Tatis were to go down for an extended period of time again?
I don't really want to think about that question.
Same, Coach. Come on, next question.
But I guess if you press me to it, it makes more sense to once again have Manny Machado be the backup shortstop. And I know that that's not ideal. You'd love to just see Manny get comfortable at third all season long and not have to bounce back and forth like he did last year. But we talked about Ty France earlier. He's got a natural position at third base. He's got a good bat. You'd feel comfortable putting him there, but you couldn't put Ty France at short. Manny did a more than serviceable job when Fernando Tatis Jr. was out last year at shortstop. If the question is whether would you rather have an infield of Manny at third and Jake Cronenworth or Jorge Mateo at short, or would you rather have an infield with Manny at short and then like a Ty France at third base? And I think for me, that's the direction I would go. So I guess Manny has to be the backup shortstop again. Now, if it's just like one day off out of every month, then that's fine. Then you can put a different guy out there. You don't have to move
Garcia
Manny over
out
for,
there. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to move Manny over for a day. But if Fernando was going to be out 2 weeks, then I probably want to see Manny out there on an everyday basis.
Mr. Woods?
Yeah, I'm with Benny. I look, if we get to that point, Coach, where we have a backup shortstop for an extended period of time, I think we're probably out of the race in a 60-game season. And in what do we define now as an extended length of time? That's a week. That's a week in this season. That's a significant amount of playing time, a week, 2 weeks, and you could really lose some footing if you have some at that point. But again, you know, it's just like the bullpen, just like the starting rotation, just like every position I think the Padres have covered right now. There is some depth there and guys that you feel absolutely comfortable with in the short term, not necessarily in the long term. Maybe, Coach, if he goes down early, you go get Frankie Lindor and you figure it out from there. Okay?
Oh, thanks for listening, by the way. Hey, what do you got for me, Chrisello? No, I talked about it during the off season when they were talking about sending Tatis out to center field. I was not a fan of that.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. But if he gets hurt, all right, then we'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, I don't have Frankie Lindor for you, Coach, unfortunately, but I do have the fact that Machado played shortstop in a World Series a couple years ago for the Dodgers. So, I mean, you're not losing much in shortstop by putting the guy over there, and I think third base could be, you know, taken care of. You can need Profar can go over to third base, Cronenworth, Teo, and obviously I love Ty France, Garcia. So, yeah, Machado's your other shortstop. I don't like to ever hook him with the word backup.
Tony?
Yeah, no, I think Machado's the best option to move over there because you know you have a third baseman that can play third baseman and is used to playing third in Ty France, should that be the case. But listen, again, a lot of this is going to boil down to if Tatis Jr. were to go down, when he goes down, who's swinging the bat well, because unlike in, you know, other seasons, you can't go back and look to see what somebody's doing in AAA. Like, there are no other games going on. So if that's the case, you only have what you – either in your taxi squad, whatever, wherever their site is to get ready, and you have the guys on your roster. So I think it all depends on when they go down, who's swinging and who's not.
Okay, I want to jump into Manny Machado. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is our 97.3 The Fans Padres Roundtable presented by Bud Light Seltzer. We're going to the top of the hour, and then I will excuse my colleagues, and we'll open up the phone lines and get your thoughts on Padre baseball for 2020. Okay, Manny Machado. Most everyone, including Manny, would say he had a down year, but I want you to listen to these numbers because over the years here of watching third baseman in San Diego, I think he had a pretty good year. 156 games, 150 hits, a .256 average. He had 21 doubles, 2 triples, 32 long balls, and 85 RBIs. That sounds pretty good. Now, I want to share a couple of stats that aren't so good. In August, 104 at-bats, a .221 average. September, 83 at-bats, a .193 average. And here's the one that I was a little concerned about, Steve Woods, because I'm going to come to you because I know you're the president of the Manny Machado Marching and Chowder Society. In 283 at-bats at Petco Park, he hit 15 homers and drove in 40 runs. But he hit only .219 at Petco Park last year and only had a .297 on base percentage at Petco. That's a little troublesome for me.
Yeah, you know, first year, big contract, the whole thing, all of it. You know, new ballpark, new teammates, essentially a new league. And I know he was, you know, with the Dodgers a little bit before, but guy grew up playing in the AL East, and you know, is to me, I look at it and go, I can't believe he's here. I really can't believe that he's the third baseman. And Coach, you mentioned just the litany of people they've run through that position over the last few years, and to look out there and see the slickest fielding third baseman that really, I want to say that I've ever seen. I love Nolan Arenado like as much as the next guy, but I love the way Manny plays the game, effortless. I think Tatis can learn a lot from him. Tony was talking about slowing his game down a little bit. Manny has that down. He's got it down to a science. Never rushes, never looks worried. And I expect massive, massive things from Manny going forward. And I love the guy unapologetically. You know, he's a warrior. He's out there every single day, and the guy wants to play every single day. He's one of the best ball players I've ever seen.
Well, I don't think a lot of people would disagree with you on that. He had some big years in Baltimore, and, of course, he was also in a hitter-friendly ballpark there at Camden Yards, had to make the adjustment to playing at Petco. And, you know, Ben, I saw a picture of Manny. I saw him during FanFest when I was down there on that Saturday, and it really looks like he's put some time in the gym and kind of cleaned up his body. Not that he wasn't in good shape last year, but it seems like he's added some muscle.
Maybe I've spent a little too much time around Woods. But doesn't it seem like this season is perfectly set up for Manny Machado? He's had that introduction to the Padres year, the chaos of being a free agent, you know, all those teams that were going after you and knowing you were going to sign the biggest contract of your career. That didn't make for a very good offseason for Manny last year. This year, as you said, Coach, he's just been able to focus in. He looks great. I think his mind is in the right place. Plus, with just 60 games to go, and they're all going to be important. You know that Manny in September being 20 games plus out with the Padres, it didn't make for the best Manny. But every game is going to be critical this year. I wouldn't be surprised if you had Manny Machado in the NL MVP conversation at the end of this year. 60 games, I think, sets up really well for Manny to just go on a nice tear like he did in parts of April and May last year. And he does that this year over 60 games. His numbers will be among the best in the league in the National League offensively. And you already know what he does defensively. So I think my lead pipe cinch this year is a really good 60 games from Manny Machado.
You know, Chris Ello, I look at Manny's numbers against left-handers last year. He really ate them up. He hit .315 against left-handers, 13 homers, 27 RBIs. Against right-handers, .239, 19 homers, 58 RBIs. And, I think he's going to be better in year two. I think there's too many things that are leading up to have him have a second so-called down year. But, man, 32 homers in what's considered a down year, that's not too bad.
No, and most of the numbers were put up in the first 4 months of the season, as you detailed, Coach. August and September, he fell off. There's really no excuse for that, but there is an excuse for it. The Padres were slipping out of contention. Tatis was hurt, and Manny Machado didn't seem to have his head in the same place the last couple months of the season as he did early on. Now, you're making $30 million a year. Nobody wants to hear that. I mean, but as Ben said, he's not going to have to sustain that for quite as long this year. Just 60 game sprint. Manny Machado puts together a big year, and the Padres are in good shape. I just think he hit into a lot of bad luck last year, too. Hit into a lot of double plays. He was kind of a rally killer, and that was just because he's hitting a lot of hard ground balls right at people, turning into double plays instead of first and third situations if they're not at the infielder. So I think things are going to turn a little for him. I think that'll get that batting average up to about .270 instead of .256 this year. And I think he's primed for a big year. He's got the right attitude. I think he himself is a little down on how he finished up last year, wants to prove that that was kind of a fluke.
Hey, Tony, I've always done it. I do it with scorecards, and, I'll sit up there and look at one team going against our Padres. And, over the years, how many guys are better at that position than our guys? It could be 6-3, 7-2, 5-4. And I also do that for positions in the division. And even though Manny, had some good offensive numbers, he was probably the fourth best offensive performer at that position in the National League West. I mean, when you throw in what Justin Turner brings to the table with the Dodgers, what Nolan Arenado does in Colorado, and Eduardo Escobar had a marvelous year last year with Arizona. Really, the only guy that, really slipped up was a guy like Evan Longoria. So, I would imagine Manny probably, in his own mind, is going to try to compete against those other guys in the NL West this year to show that, hey, I'm still a pretty good ball player.
Forget the NL West. How about both the NL and AL West? Best third basemen in all of baseball. Just think about it. Anthony Rendon over there in Anaheim now. You got Chapman in Oakland. You got Bregman in Houston. So the whole NL AL West third base chain is as elite as any in the world at this point. So, but listen, I agree with Ben. I think him and I have Ben and Woodsy, we've both talked about this. He came over, and much like Eric Hosmer in his first year, remember, baseball players are creatures of habit. They come into spring training late. They kind of, slow play it into getting ready for the season. And they both in their first season had years that they probably look back on and say, I could have been better, right? Now you fast forward to the next season for a guy like Manny Machado. He is now a little more used to seeing these National League West pitchers. I know he spent some time with the Dodgers in that last couple months of the season, but that's a different ball game, because at that point you're starting to see pitchers that aren't even going to be at the big league level the following year. But nevertheless, he's had a year to get accustomed to the National League, had a year to get accustomed to the division. I think offensively, man, I think, as Ben said, we could very well see his name in that MVP race. I just think he's motivated. As Chris mentioned, he didn't like the way he finished last year, and he's got two familiar faces on the coaching staff. I can't say that won't be a big deal. Having Wayne Kirby and Dickerson there, both guys he grew up with, basically, and know how to push his buttons. I think he's going to have a good offensive year. I think this is going to be a great year for Manny Machado.
Hi, you're listening to our 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable presented by Bud Light Seltzer. We're going to the top of the hour, and my colleagues will get on with their day. Of course, Gwen and Chris will be back at 3 o'clock, 3 to 7. They're going to replay this roundtable in the 6 o'clock hour, and then tomorrow morning on the Ben and Woods Show, they're going to replay the roundtable in the 5 o'clock hour. So if you missed any of it, you can make sure you're dialed into 97.3 The Fan. All right, we're going to move behind the plate. And we got Austin Hedges, we got Francisco Mejia. I would certainly think right now, for what I've seen, you got to go with Francisco Mejia for a couple of reasons. Number one, he gives you more offensively, but also, too, we got to find out what we really got here in this ball player that they traded for a couple of years ago for Brad Hand. And then, of course, you got Austin Hedges. And Ben Higgins, I'll start with you. And, you know, Austin Hedges, you know, I look at his numbers last year. I mean, dismal offensively, a 176 average. An on-base percentage, a 252. He was 1-for-23 against the Dodgers last year. And, you know, let's start with Hedges, Benny, and talk about, we can talk about his defense all we want, but, man, right now he needs a tennis racket to hit with.
Yeah, I don't have a, I think my patience with Austin Hedges has kind of run out. You know he's going to be good defensively, and you know he's not going to hit. Does that kill you? If you've got a great lineup, it doesn't kill you. You can have one, you know, poor hitter in there as long as he's giving you great defense, especially behind the plate. But if other guys are struggling, then all of a sudden you're 7, 8, 9. I mean, it's every third inning you're going down with nothing. So you can't afford more than one kind of less than average hitter in your lineup if you want to have a good offense. I think for Hedges though, the playing time is going to kind of come down to what the designated hitter situation. If Francisco Mejia is the only one swinging a great bat, he could be the DH. Austin Hedges is behind the plate, and you get that defense in there, you still get the bat in the lineup. If someone else steps up, like a Ty France, like a Josh Naylor, and they're hitting the cover off the ball and they're being used as the DH, then you put in Francisco Mejia behind the plate, and you've got plenty of offense, and Austin Hedges probably sits on the bench a lot. So it's going to be dependent on whether the Padres find a good DH option. Could determine how much playing time Austin Hedges gets.
Hey, Woodsy, if the Padres are serious about being a contender, can they afford to have a so-called everyday catcher in the lineup hitting 176, no matter how good a defensive catcher he is?
No, you can't, Coach. And if you look at some of the teams that have won the World Series or perennial playoff, teams that make it into the playoffs, you know, they'll have that defensive catcher, a guy that, hey, he may run into one because Austin's got some pop in his bat, and he can run into one every now and then. I mean, Austin Hedges would be a great Astro. He'd be a great Dodger. He'd be a great Yankee. These stacked lineups where, hey, man, you hit him in the nine hole and go from there, and he's not going to kill you. But the DH, I think, is going to help the Padres this year. They do have some options. But for my money, man, I gotta go with the switch hitting catcher, Coach. I gotta develop him. He needs reps back there. I'm sure the pitchers are more comfortable throwing to Austin Hedges than they are to Frankie Mejia. And that matters. That is a big deal. But for me, I gotta go with Frankie behind the dish.
Hey, Chris Ello, I was looking at Austin Hedges' numbers last night. Against right-handers, he hit 186 last year and 242 at-bats. And I'm going, man, he had to have hit better against left-handers. But no, in 70 at-bats last year, he hit 143 against left-handed pitching and had only a 265 on-base percentage.
He only hit one home run last year against left-handed pitching, so they didn't get much from behind the plate against left-handed pitching. Mejia hit most of his home runs against right-handers, so they've got to find an answer here one way or the other. I am not one to give up on Austin Hedges. I think Austin Hedges is a gamer. I heard so many stories about how many times he would be staying after games and upset with himself with the way he was swinging the bat and down in the cages till midnight, 1 in the morning, working on his stroke. And I just got to believe a guy like that is eventually going to break through a little bit. And I know everybody wants to see the big numbers on offense from the catching position, but what you really want to see more than anything else is small numbers from the pitching position. And everybody on this staff seems to love to throw to Austin Hedges. And I'll tell you one thing, if I was a pitcher and I had Austin Hedges behind the plate working my game, I wouldn't care if he ever got a hit, just as long as he handled my pitching. So I think you're going to see him a little little bit more than you guys want to see him. I think he's going to have to obviously produce a little bit more than he did last year with the bat. But remember, you got the DH this year, so he can bat ninth, kind of be your pitcher hitter as it was last year. And instead of having an 8-9 black hole, you have just a hole there in the nine spot. And hopefully Hedges, as Woodsy said, runs into one once in a while. But I think his value, he's too valuable. And everybody, the framing, the pitches, and all of that stuff's nice, and it's fun to talk about. But I just think, in general, the way he handles this staff is much too important to overlook.
Well, it'd be interesting. You've got a new pitching coach in Larry Rothschild. You got a new manager, and it will be interesting to see how that situation works. Tony, you know, I'll be honest with you. I've seen enough of Austin Hedges. I was so excited when they drafted him. I had looked at tape on him when he was playing high school baseball. There's no doubt he's a good defensive catcher. I mean, he's not Johnny Bench or Carlton Fisk or guys of that ilk, but he's a good, solid major league catcher. And I think he stands out now because there aren't a lot of great defensive catchers. But yeah, I think we know what he is right now as a hitter. And I think you got to find out more about Mejia.
I have to be honest, going into the first spring training, I was really excited about Francisco Mejia. And I know it was just spring training, but I watched almost all of his at-bats. And he just didn't look like a guy that was ready offensively. Started kind of reverting back to some of the things we saw when he first arrived, going out of the zone, which is a big thing. That being said, I have no defense for Austin Hedges. Offensively, he has struggled mightily. I think some of the things that Chris spoke about might be to his detriment, right? He might care a little bit too much offensively. I know what that's like, going in there, taking 100 more swings after the game, try to get your swing right. Sometimes it can take you backwards. And maybe having a new manager, fresh start, will help Austin Hedges. But I think this is another position, once again, where the hot hand has to play. And in particularly this position, when it comes to the catcher, you have to be leery on who's back there from a receiving standpoint, because I'm a firm believer that as bad as Austin was offensively, defensively, with the young pitching staffs that he's dealt with, I think he's been a big part of the reason why they've had success. That being said, in a 60-game sprint, you don't have time to develop. I know we want to see Mejia. So, again, it's got to be the hot hand. It's got to be the guy that's helping your team win in whatever fashion they can at that point. And I think what we'll see, most likely, unless somebody all of a sudden becomes the offensive guy that we are hoping for, I think we see what we saw last year, which was with almost a split down the middle in terms of at bats and how they got them.
Okay, I want to go right back and just give me an answer here. Benny, who you have as the opening day starting catcher for the Padres?
Francisco Mejia.
Woodsy?
Well, I would pick Mejia, but it's probably going to be Austin Hedges.
Chris Ello, you going with Hedges?
I would pick Hedges, but it's probably going to be Francisco Mejia.
Tony?
I'm going to say Austin Hedges, but it'll probably be Francisco Mejia, though.
Hey, you guys, don't quit your day jobs, okay?
Coach, this is our day job.
This is what you call straddling the fence right here.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
These are hot takes.
I want to go back across. We've got about 2 minutes left, and so I need some concise analysis out of you gentlemen. I know you guys are pros, and I know you can get it done. And, Chris L., I'm going to start with you. Do we see the youngster, the 19-year-old C.J. Abrams, up with this ball club at any point in time in the 2020 season after only playing minor league or rookie ball last year?
Boy, that would really I think it would be a long shot to make that jump from rookie all the way up to the big leagues. But if ever a team had an opening for a guy like that to make a debut, it would be this Padre ball club. So second base is calling his name if he has a chance to shine and the other guys struggle and slump a little bit. It's a long shot. I'll just say that. But there's an opening for him there if it all goes his way.
Okay, we got about 45 seconds. Tony, your thoughts on C.J. Abrams?
Yeah, I think it's unlikely. But again, in a 60-game sprint, you can't account for the type of injuries that may occur. You just don't know. So there's a chance he could end up on this roster and playing some games for the Padres. But I just think it's very unlikely.
Woodsy?
Yeah, give me Taylor Trammell out there, Coach, on the outfield. I think he's got a better shot than C.J. Abrams. C.J.
Abrams was still posting graduation pictures on Instagram at this time last year. Yeah. He's not quite ready yet. No.
No. We're going.
All righty, gentlemen. Well, hey, great job today, and we'll look forward to doing this again next week. And you guys have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, Coach. You take two, Coach.
And you've been listening to our 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable, presented by Bud Light Seltzer. We'll get to the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. Love to hear from you. Talk Padre baseball, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. This is the John Contreras Show, right here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Thanks for downloading the John Contreras Show on demand. And remember, you can always listen to my show as well as on-demand audio from Ben and Woods, Gwen and Chris, and other Intercom San Diego stations using the Radio.com app. Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode.